Hi and welcome to CDI's Restorative Practices podcast, Circles of Connection, where we get right into the heart of the community and talk all things RP. These past few months we've been busy collecting stories from right across the country about the impact of RP on people's work and life. We talked to social and community workers, youth workers, SNAs, teachers, students and more to gather their testimonies and stories. Each episode is focusing on a different setting. If you're not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative questions and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of our podcast series where it's all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danyu, a restorative practices trainer for CDI, delighted to be gathering these stories. For this episode, I interviewed John Madigan. He's a former youth worker in Tala West and currently a primary school teacher in Dublin. He's also a restorative practices trainer for CDI and has a wide experience as a practitioner and as a trainer. We talked about his professional and personal journey with RP, how it is embedded in his teaching role, and what he recommends for schools who are interested in implementing restorative practices. Let's hear first how he got started with RP when he was a young youth worker in Tala West.
My name is John Madigan and I'm a sixth class teacher in Bishop Galvin National School in Dublin, and I'm also a trainer in restorative practices. So originally I studied in UCC and did a course called Public Health and Epidemiology, which I know is kind of a buzzword at the moment, unfortunately, with the current pandemic. And an element of this course involved public health work in the community. I really enjoyed this aspect of it, and when I finished up, I applied for a few things in that field and eventually ended up being recruited as a youth worker in West Tala in 2010. It was a bit of a baptism of fire, and I was a bit lost in it to begin with and would have struggled in the role initially. I was 21 years old and from a very rural part of South Kilkenny, where the nearest neighbour might have been half a kilometre away. So this was a very different environment, and the nature of the work was that it could be somewhat chaotic at times, and I began to realise that I couldn't just stroll into this, and that it was quite actually a complex and very skilled facilitation piece. I guess at the time my confidence was low, and I struggled trying to assert myself as a facilitator, particularly in group work, and I was feeling stressed, and that maybe like a lot of people starting out in their careers, that this mightn't have been the right path for me. So I really had to go on a journey inward of kind of finding out who I was, what my values were, and how that could fit with the work that I was doing. And I guess very luckily at the time, CDI and Claire Casey were rolling out their restorative practices pilot program in West Tala. And I went along with some of my colleagues to the initial training, and I guess it was kind of a real moment of inspiration for me, that I could see that this was something that I could really work with, and it could give me a kind of a clear roadmap of how I could facilitate as a youth worker, while also espousing the values that I had. So I guess it really helped me to build connections and facilitate the young people's needs in both an assertive and sensitive way. And I actually really grew to love the work that I was doing and the amazing young people that I was meeting along the way. In terms of the day-to-day facilitation, I really began to go on confidence and changing my practice to fit better with my values. I suppose values such as fairness, respect, honesty, empathy, safety, trust. And a real major piece of the puzzle was actually beginning to use circles to facilitate the group work and using the talking piece. And I just could see straight away how much the children enjoyed it and how they really engaged so well with it. And they began to grow and learn about RP alongside me as we were implementing it. And a few of them actually went on to be trained up as restorative facilitators in terms of being youth leaders themselves as well, which was amazing. Because it was part of the CDI pilot program, there was lots of other adults working in the community from a very diverse range of sectors, and we kind of really developed a great friendship and a support group together. And one person in particular that I worked really closely with was Jean Gilmore, who was the school completion project coordinator in Fettercairn in Springfield. And we would have co-facilitated a lot of groups together, and would have both really, really enjoyed, you know, using restorative approaches and being restorative as a way of being when working in those groups. And I guess a real eureka moment for me, and I know Jean would remember well, happened maybe 2011 or 2012 when we had a girls group, which was a group of teenage girls that we used to meet in an after schools club in a community center in Fettercairn. And we had built up a real great trust with the group, I suppose, through working restoratively with them. And it had reached a stage where if they arrived to the community center before us, they would actually let themselves in and get themselves set up and make a cup of tea and be settled. Because often myself and Jean would have been having maybe a bit of a chat in the car park and things like that while we were catching up. But anyway, this time we came into the community centre and the girls were in already, and straight away we could hear like very raucous sounds coming from the kitchen, and lots of shouting and screaming. And when we went in there, we could see that there was a physical fight taking place and there was arms swinging and cups flying everywhere and everything. So we had to act quickly and assertively and separate the girls. And then it was a real moment of what do we do here? So we kind of looked at each other, and we just recently done the upskilling in RP. So we decided on the spot to try and dip the toes in the water and go and use the questions with the group as opposed to sending them home. And so we sat down with the girls and asked them all the questions in turn. And as the group went through them, it became apparent that what had happened was something actually quite simple and basically a misunderstanding, that one of the girls had felt that she was getting less one-to-one time with Jean in the school setting. I suppose Jean had a real maternal instinct and impact on the girls, and they were all very jealous sometimes of each other's time they got to spend with her. And they had come to a disagreement about this. So when we realized that, it was kind of quite easy to solve, because Jean was able to communicate them that, of course, there were no favorites and that she was trying her best to spend her time evenly amongst them. And in the end, the girls actually, you know, kind of laughed it off. And I think we were able to really repair the harm there and give guarantees that we could move forward together. And I certainly know if we had done what we might have done initially and send the group away, that things would probably have escalated and there could have been irreparable damage done in that situation. Whereas actually it strengthened their bond, and we went on to work really well together as a group, and we had just some amazing, amazing times with that group of girls.
After a few years, John changed career and brought RP in his new job.
So after working in youth work for about 6 years, I went back to education and retrained as a primary school teacher. And I did a 2-year upskilling course in primary teaching in Marino Institute of Education in Dublin. I think right from the very beginning, once we had our initial lectures and when we did our teaching practices, I could see that restorative approaches were just such a perfect fit with primary teaching. And certainly a lot of the facilitation skills that I'd learned in youth work were so applicable to it and transferable as well in a way. I guess I suppose when I started to apply for teaching jobs, once I finished the course in Marino, I would have included all the work and experience that I was lucky enough to have with restorative practices. And when I went for an interview for the job that I currently have, it did come up during the interview process as a note of interest, and it was something that I think was no doubt beneficial. To be able to talk about something like that, and particularly because I guess is at the moment it's very much talked about in educational circles, both for primary and post-primary, with good reason. And I can certainly say that it was beneficial to me, not just in enhancing my ability to facilitate teaching in a classroom, but also in terms of potential employers being interested in it as well. So when I went on to actually start my career in teaching, I would have brought restorative practices with me, thanks to CDI and through working restoratively in youth work. And I would have engaged with my principal at the time about it, and he was very, very interested and really supported me in actually using restorative practices in my own classroom. And straight away, some colleagues became interested in it. They were really intrigued by some of the language that I was using, things like using circles in the classroom, and certainly how I was responding to situations of conflict. So it started to kind of spread from there in our school. Alongside that, at the same time, again, I suppose luckily for me in terms of timing, there was a real growth in interest in restorative practices in primary and post-primary schools. So I was able to engage with CDI again in providing teacher training programs as part of summer courses and during the academic year as well. So I guess as time progressed, then some of my colleagues became so interested that they wanted to attend training in RP as well. So slowly but surely, our school would have nearly had all staff members trained up. We had a change of principal, and my new principal, Catherine Corbett, was really interested in it and so supportive of it. And it reached a stage where two colleagues actually trained up as trainers, Aisling and Kevin. So we were really able to build quite a sustainable model of RP in the school, which is still ongoing to this day. And it's something that I guess we can all feel really proud about and that I couldn't recommend highly enough for other primary school settings.
For him, personal and professional journeys are interwoven, and it all comes back to building a sense of community with the people he's living and working with.
I guess my professional and personal journey with RP are very much intertwined. And I think this is often what people say they experience with it. It can start out with something as simple as attending another CPD course, but slowly but surely it can actually find its way in and like permeate your whole life, I think. I really feel RP has enhanced my own relationships with others, and it's given me a way of communicating that speaks to my values. It's also helped with giving me more patience, I think, and understanding and empathy for others. It doesn't go perfectly, of course, and I'm still learning from my many mistakes, but I guess it's the fun of living in, and sharing our space with others. I'd find it also has definitely impacted my point of view on the absolute importance of human connection and community. I think it's something maybe in modern times and in modern Ireland that we can lose sight of, myself included, that we get so caught up in the rat race and inverted commas and pursuing things that are self-serving. And I think, I guess we might have lost sight of some of our traditional values and things that make Ireland unique and special. I know I would have spoken to my parents and my older relations a lot about the idea of a mettle, where in rural Ireland, if there was things that needed to be done, big tasks like harvesting crops or mowing fields, that all the community would come together and work together towards a common goal. And they would then, when it was their turn that they needed a dig out, you would go and help them. It was just, that's such a kind of a personification, I suppose, of the sense of community that used to be there in Ireland that maybe we've lost sight of, and maybe we've lost a focal point in a lot of communities. And I really think restorative approaches can have a very impactful role in turning ourselves back towards each other and reconnecting with each other and re-establishing in some ways our sense of community.
As a teacher, John's practice focuses on building good relationships and sincere connections with his students. Before offering tools to respond to conflict or harm done, RP helped him build a social capital and a positive climate in his classroom that make addressing potential harm much easier.
I suppose I found restorative practices have influenced and supported everything I do in my role as a teacher, both in terms of the proactive and responses elements of it. So like day to day, this could be achieved through a number of different ways, be it modeling using restorative language, trying to be consciously and deliberately fair, working with people, using circles, and I suppose then of course when conflict or harm occurs, which it always will throughout the course of a year, you have a way of using the questions through conversations and meeting to respond to that. I really believe first and foremost that RP has to be about building strong connections and relationships and an overall positive dynamic in your class. I think if this happens, no matter how significant the needs or challenges might be in a group, you can really have a very successful year. And I believe this has to begin with modeling, and it's something that I've learned that modeling is absolutely vital. And I know that's mentioned in a lot of literature around RP, that idea of if we're not modeling what we teach, then we are teaching something else. And I know I have been guilty of, on occasion, let my frustrations get the better of me and standing at the top of the class shouting to the children to be quiet which I know is very ironic, and it's certainly not modeling the behaviors that you would desire to see in others. So that can definitely happen at the more challenging times. But I suppose really to say that I think when you're starting out with a class, just to have that focus and idea of building connection before curriculum and having a relationships first approach, which is mentioned in some current literature. And there's so many different personalities and needs in a class that it's important to try and get to know these as best as you can. And this also has to involve sharing some of yourself in that process too, and being authentic. I think the children, they need to know who you really are, what your values are, your hobbies, your interests, your personality, maybe some things you're afraid of. And I know that might go against some of the old teaching advice of don't smile till Christmas, which I don't think will fly if you're trying to be a restorative teacher. And I know I found this a challenge, and it's something that people can find difficult, entering into that vulnerable space, and you can be out of your comfort zone. But I think it's just really essential to give what you expect of the children themselves. It could be something as simple as just talking about your hobbies or your favorite sports team and making that connection and finding those same things out about the children. I know certainly over the past year, I've spoken a lot about my lovely nephew, Irla, who's 2 years old now. But, I'd often share with him the progress he's making, if he's taking his first steps or what new words he's been using or different skills that he's learning. And I think the children really value things like that little window into your own humanness and your own personal life, and sometimes they can really be more likely to retain that information than maybe something you're trying to cover in a maths lesson, but that's okay. I guess other ways of building that kind of social capital could be through doing things like trying to catch people being good. And over the first couple of weeks in our school, we'd set ourselves a goal of trying to send a positive note home to every child in the class, so that you've built that connection and built that kind of capacity in the young person to be seen in a good light and to see themselves in a good light. And through lots of things like that, you can build up this kind of currency almost in the room, that when things go wrong, which they inevitably will, you have all this connection and this all these relationships built up, that there's a desire there for people to want to repair it. And I just think that's so important.
Practicing being fair is an important part of the process.
I think the idea of consciously practicing the skill of fairness is something that's really beneficial in teaching, and it's something that's something that we all strive for and hope to have in life and to be described as, but it's actually something that you need to be really deliberate about and conscious of and practice it. Something that can work well, I guess, is engaging the children where possible in an explanation of decisions that have been made. I know, for example, with a class I had this year, they were mad for PE. They just absolutely love it. And there's been a couple of times over the year that we've had to postpone it. And as you can imagine, delivering that news can cause a lot of dissatisfaction and potential uproar in the group. So the way you could communicate that fairly, I guess, would be to say, let's say if a PE lesson was cancelled because the hall wasn't viable to be used, you might say, unfortunately, we won't be able to do PE today because the hall is not available and it's raining outside, but I will try my best to get us a slot outdoors for longer over the coming days. Is that fair? And I feel you get a far more reasonable response to that potentially than if you just said to the group, PE is off. Okay, I have to ask you why. That's the why, So certainly I found it can be really helpful with engaging the children. And I suppose they might see it as something that's value to them, that they're being communicated with in a respectable way.
You can see the power of circle time in the classroom.
One of the most significant things, of course, I think from the RP toolkit would be the use of circles. And these are something that we would endeavour to use in our school on either a daily basis or at least twice a week. For something, I guess, which is technically quite simple in one way, the idea of sitting in a circle and passing a speaking and listening piece, it's actually just amazing. It kind of blows my mind every time nearly that we facilitate a circle about how impactful it can be. And I suppose there's so much going on there for the children, and they really love it. And we just had some amazing moments over the years in circles in the school. I suppose one that stands out for me would be a couple of years ago. I would have been working with some children in the class who would have been selectively nonverbal. And there was an amazing SNA who would have been working restoratively with them. And they would have still found it quite difficult to contribute to class discussions. But I would have facilitated circles with that group. And initially, they would have passed the talk in peace because, you know, one of the key tenets of circles is that it's, participation is voluntary. But after a while, once they could see how safe a space that it was and how everybody was listening to, and it was a really non-judgmental environment, they actually began to share. And I remember the first couple of times it happened, their peers' jaws dropped to the floor, and so did the SNAs of mine. And it was just a really, really powerful moment that showed that circles are just a really, really great way for encouraging people to communicate openly with each other.
He also sees the benefit of RP in dealing with conflict and challenging behaviours.
Of course, as I mentioned earlier, restorative practices can be really effective in terms of responding to challenging behaviour or situations where harm might have occurred, or in situations of conflict. When working restoratively with some young people who have had behavioural issues over the past few years, it has become apparent that empathy is certainly something that you can help to cultivate and teach and grow. And I think the restorative questions can really help with this. I guess sometimes we have to be patient with them and like trust the process, as it might not be perfect the first couple of times that a young person's behavior is responded to restoratively. But from my experience, like a lot of challenging behaviors can be born out of a young person having low self-esteem and negative self-worth. And you need to help that young person see their own unique potential. And like I've seen the firsthand the impact it can have on helping a child to learn social responsibility and build empathy and understand the impact that the behavior might have on others. I think it's really important as well when working restoratively to try and separate the behavior from the person and help them to do that also, and you know, to see the light in themselves that and tell them that you see it too. That can just be so beneficial.
Finally, restorative practices open and maintain a safe and meaningful learning path, both for the children in his class and himself.
I think that restorative approaches can have a really positive impact on the overall readiness to learn of a child. And certainly for some of the things that I mentioned that occur during circle time, that the children can learn really, really strong oral language skills and listening skills that are applicable across all different subject areas, in terms of debates and discussions that you might be having in English or expressing themselves in SPHE, or talking about different things in geography or history or science. Definitely as well that the ability to express themselves restoratively and build emotional literacy has an impact on how the overall day can go, and can really open them up to a space where they feel safe and comfortable to learn. I guess sometimes people might argue that it's very time consuming to embed restorative practices as a teacher, but I guess a lot of us would argue that you can't afford not to spend the time doing it because it has such a positive impact on the overall environment and the learning of the children. I think it's important to note here that as well, like of course I don't get it perfect, and there are certainly days that don't go right for me, and as we know, when working with young people, the best laid plans can go out the window after 5 minutes. But I certainly think restorative practices have given me a great roadmap and compass and way of being that I know can work really, really well. And even when I veer off track, or when there's roadblocks or wrong turns, it's something that I feel comfortable in being able to return to, because I think at the heart of it are those values and that intention. And as Michelle Stowe would say, a real RP guru of hers, that you like who you are when you're being restorative. And I think that's one of the most important things to note about it.
The current closure of schools makes him aware of how the relationships and connections built in school are precious to the children.
I think over the last I suppose 10 weeks or so now since the restrictions have been in place. We've been in our school, we've been making phone calls to the children just to check in with how they are, if they're okay with the work that we're assigning, and if, you know, how are they feeling about things, especially I have sixth class this year, and because of the time of year, things like their graduation and their confirmation and things have been postponed, and I know that's very disappointing for them, for a lot of them. So just to check in to see how they are, it's been a great thing, but certainly it's become apparent through talking to my colleagues and through talking to my own class that the biggest thing the children say they're missing are those connections, you know, and whether those connections be with their peers or with the adults in the school. I think that's a real testament to the impact it can have if you have a really focused and deliberate approach on building a strong connection with the children that you're working with, and a positive school culture and climate.
John gives some tips around the implementation of restorative practices in school, coming from his experience as a teacher and as an RP trainer in various contexts. And his approach is all the more interesting that it is complementary to what Anne-Marie presented in our episode 5.
So I think for RP to be successfully implemented in schools, you need to look at it long term, and for it to be like at least a 3 to 5 year process in terms of implementing change. There are a number of key steps that you can put in place to ensure the best possible chance of it being adopted on a whole school level. And I guess, like I said, it's important to understand that change is messy and won't be the same in any two schools beside each other. But one of the most important things, I think, is to get buy-in from school leadership. And as I said, our principal, Catherine, has been really, really supportive on that. And she's even said to us a couple of times, I don't know how else we could have dealt with that when referring to situations that were responded to restoratively, which is I think is really interesting. And I suppose those schools often experience the reassuring fact that RP often is putting a name to a lot of what they're doing already. There is a need most of the time for some paradigm shift to take place. Schools may need to be, I suppose, become more open to the idea of building social responsibility, and looking towards repairing relationships when harm occurs, and focusing on reintegration as opposed to stigmatization or blaming and punishing. I think there's a distinct need to move away from the idea that the more you punish people, the less likely they are to reoffend. And I know, as I overheard Michelle Stowe saying recently, if the same child is in detention 10 times in a row, will the 11th time be the one that helps to fix them? Most likely not. So I guess RP is based on the belief that the better relationships that you have, the less likely you are to cause harm. And when harm or conflict occurs, like we said, which it inevitably will in relationships, those affected will repair the harm and make amends as the relationship itself is strong and valued.
So time, support from the leadership of the school, and a paradigm shift away from a punitive or retributive thinking are the first key elements. Then training and support are essential.
The actual starting point of RP to become established in a school can come from a number of different places, but I think it's important to be realistic and to start small. As in our case, in a couple of classrooms in the school, whenever possible, I think one of the early stages needs to be to provide an opportunity for training for all staff and stakeholders to attend, and incentivize this as best as possible, whether it be offering Croke Park hours in schools, or half in, half out days, or, you know, training that goes towards their CPD. It can just be really, really beneficial, as it helps to spread the message as far as you can and ensures clarity around what the intention of RP is.
John would encourage teachers to first focus on using restorative practices to build positive relationships in the school, rather than begin with the tools to address harm or dealing with conflict. Circle times in the classroom or community of practices for the staff help to achieve this.
Like I said, I think it's really important to clearly communicate that it's a values-based philosophy and way of being first, as opposed to being a behaviour management tool. And I believe that as advocates of RP, we need to move conversations beyond behaviour management and towards the importance of connection and relationships. And with that in mind, I think the early stages of working restoratively in a school are best spent looking at the proactive elements. So maybe potentially if you're in a school that's adapting restorative approaches, that potentially you could look at maybe focusing on circles first and then coming back together and discussing the impact that that relationship building approach may have amongst the group. And then eventually, as you progress, moving towards the more responsive elements of RP, such as using the questions to address harm and situations of conflict. I think once RP is up and running in a school, it can be really important to keep replenishing it and to keep nourishing it as best as possible. So I know a lot of schools would set up a community of practice or a professional learning community. I think from our experience in our school, that has been really, really beneficial because we're consistently checking in with each other. And we've reached a space where we're able to be vulnerable with each other and describe situations where we wouldn't be too proud of how we might have dealt with them, and maybe work together and problem solve as to how we could have responded restoratively instead, or how we can follow up on that. It can also be really good form to share new learning and new information, or any literature that's out there, or any cool videos, just to keep, as I said, reinvigorating our understanding and growing restoratively together.
Adapting the school policies and keep communicating with all the stakeholders are the next key points.
I think that then, moving on from that, if you feel that your school is really consciously committed to restorative approaches, then it might be time to look at adapting some of your policies to speak to that. So things like your code of behaviour, your anti-bullying policy, and other resources that a school has to support their practices. It can be important to go on a journey of starting to adapt them, because what you'll often find is that what's written in those pieces isn't actually what you're doing. So I suppose it's important to reframe them to speak to the practices that are taking place in the school, and they'll also support you if there might be an issue that arises, that you're able to say, well, this is actually part of our school policy to respond restoratively to these situations. So it can be a real support as well for staff and key stakeholders. I think throughout all this change, it's just really, really vital and important to communicate all the time with those affected by that, and to really try and engage individuals that may have some reservations about it or maybe skeptical, and to really listen to their skepticism and the challenges that they might be experiencing with it, and to make sure that they feel listened to, and that you try your best to address those and engage those people. And then I guess all the time you need to keep going back to seeing that this is should go back to the values, and that really that can really help, that when, like in any school, it can happen that you can lose sight of it, or that things aren't going well, or that you're starting to revert back to your traditional approaches. Just keep going back to the values and the intention of working restoratively. And that can really help kind of show you the light again and steer you back on the right path, I would find.
Finally, he shares some little tips that can make it easier for day-to-day practice in the school.
But certainly from our experience in our school, it can be really beneficial to understand that it is something that will take time, and that you need to provide support structures and have a system in place to allow adults and children in this working in the school to have the best possible chance of interacting restoratively. So whether that be the establishment of a care team in the school, or having special restorative spaces for you to address issues when conflict may occur, to have classrooms set up so that's quite easy to establish a circle space. We would have giraffes in every classroom, which as we know is the restorative animal, and we would use that as our talking pieces. And all these things can really, really help to address those concerns around having the time and space to facilitate RP in a school.
John concludes the interview with a meaningful reflection on how restorative approaches could help schools and teachers to move forward after the COVID-19 situation.
I suppose just to say, I think that RP can play a vital role in returning to school post-closure. An article was circulated recently from a number of RP sources called Restore Our Schools by Belinda Hopkins. And she uses the word restore as an acronym to provide a lens through which staff, children and parents can look at the strategy and plans that are needed for everyone's well-being and for a safe and healthy return to school. It paints a picture of how RP can be beneficial in terms of processing and recognising what has happened. I give everybody an opportunity to share their story As even though this has been a shared experience, there's no doubt life has been very different for us all during this crisis. I think it'll really help us to build empathy and compassion and give people an opportunity to process any trauma that may have been experienced during these times. And, you know, really rebuild and reconnect the relationships between key stakeholders in the school, and give us a shared vision of how to move forward together post-COVID-19.
And his final point is for CDI and the community of practitioners he's part of.
And I suppose one final thing to say is just, I guess, how grateful I am to CDI for initially introducing me to RP. I can honestly say it's just really enriched my life and helped me to both look inwards and turn towards people in my life through making stronger connections and building positive relationships. And I guess sitting here looking and talking to you, Dorothy, it's just an example of how it's introduced me to so many amazing people from such a diverse range of backgrounds and different sectors. And there's too many to mention, but I just know I've learned so much from you and from them, and I'm learning all the time and continuing to grow with it. There'll still be many days that will be stressful and won't go to plan, but I guess with RP, you know that your intention's in the right place and you can be kinder to yourself around it when things don't go right. And I guess little did I know walking into another training course in City West in 2010 that it was going to have such an indelible impact on my life. And I'm certainly still finding my way and learning and growing with it every day. And I feel like it will be for life, but I just guess I'm just very grateful to have been introduced to restorative practices.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to rate and to subscribe to the show. And thank you to the production team at the podcast studios and to all who took part on the project. Find out more at cdi.ie.